Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Ryan Knighton and his wife Tracy have been together for more than 20 years. In the beginning, when he still had his sight, Ryan made a point of storing away a memory of Tracy's face. How he deals with everything else is another story. David Oyelowo stars in the new movie Don't Let Go. He reads Ryan's essay, Seeing the World Through My Wife's Eyes.
My birthday is a conflicted 24 hours. While I'm more than happy to bumble about this life looking for whatever it is we look for, my birthday also happens to mark a second beginning. The morning I turned 18, I was told I was going blind. My doctor said the twilight would dim for another 5, maybe 10 years, then, well, poof. Now, as someone for whom the lights have gone out, I puzzle over our zeal for blowing out candles on cakes. Sighted folks get off on the strangest rituals. Not that I'm party-pooping at my own bash. I have other causes for celebration. For one thing, my wife Tracy and I were born on the same day, 12 hours apart. We discovered this when we met in graduate school 10 years ago, when I was still a somewhat sighted guy. Our joint birthday catapulted us into a first date, wings and a beer at a sports bar. That night, we turned 23 together. More accurately, I had already aged in the morning, and I gloated that Tracy would understand certain things when she was older. We've been inseparable ever since. Sort of. I would give anything to tell you what my wife looks like. But I can't. I haven't seen her face in 5 years, and even my memory of her is rapidly fading. Her expressions, body language, the shapely gait of her walk... all of those things are dissolving in my mind as I move further away from the visual world and the memory of what it means to see. Blindness is a troubling separation from my girl, and for her, from me. The paradox stings, too. Always with me is a feeling that I miss her, even though she's here, in traces of smell, sound, taste, and texture. These hint at the pleasure of an image I used to know but can't have. Now, I bet I know what you're thinking. Sure, I'm acutely aware that I must delight in my other senses. In fact, sighted people are almost always the ones reminding me to get with the program and to enjoy it. In so advising me, many of them subsequently become lost in daydreams about a partner who really listens. You know, like a blind guy might. No doubt, sight can dominate, if not overwhelm us. Having said that, the whole blindness deal still stinks. It's a lesser bliss, I'm sorry to report. I do my best, though. Consider Tracy's sound. The other day, when she finished shopping, she returned to fetch me from a bench. I'm not a fan of noodling around the mall. Really, I'd rather test electrical sockets with a wet finger. That's in part why I prefer to wait on a bench. It's also more comfortable than standing around Banana Republic, looking lost and confused as I tend to look. Although I didn't see her coming, I thought I recognized her footsteps, so I stood up. "How did you know it was me?" she asked, placing my hand on her elbow. The leather was unfamiliar, a new coat. Had I not identified Tracy by her footsteps, I still would have known her by the feel of her elbow, even when dressed in this new, smooth texture. I would wager everybody has known the body of a lover to this degree. Touch is enough, and I doubt it's a party trick specific to squinty folks. "Nice coat," I said. "I guess it was you by the way you walk. Your boots make a certain music when you move. Just sounds like you." Call it an attempt at charm, honesty, or a surrender to my condition, but I've learned to appreciate such sensations more than I used to. Tracy's sounds and smells mean more to me and my desire than they did when I was a sighted guy. At least that's what I tell myself and practice on a daily basis, the way others work at yoga. If I were less shy, I would have added that she sounds attractive to me. Her walk is quick and sure. She prefers hard soles and higher heels, tapered ones, not wedges. Each of her boots makes two defined clicks when she steps. That sharpness is nothing like, say, the sound from a rubbery sneaker. I think of those as the footwear of wallflowers. Practical, but mute, and alarming to the blind. They are called sneakers, after all. By contrast, I adore the clean, articulated percussion of Tracy's step. Because of her deliberate speed, I also hear her punchy confidence. The total sound is an extension of her character. She is meticulous, self-assured, and well-spoken. That's the sound of the woman I love, and I try to listen for it. The picture remains incomplete, though, no matter how much I revel in these details. I can't honestly say I feel those sensations as a fully realized image of my gal. Something about them remains malnourished. True, as a recently blinded man, my other senses buoyed me, but I can't help feeling as if something is missing, too. Once a sighted man, always a sighted man, perhaps. Smell has its own limitations, and I don't mean smell in the derogatory sense. Even a pretty smell, when too present, is called a smell. Yet for me, my wife's smell raises different olfactory trouble, and it has little to do with my nose. When Tracy passes me in our house, her fragrance doesn't arrive in advance. Perhaps that would smell needy, even clumsy or brash. But as soon as Tracy nears me, the faint sweetness of her air unfolds. The notes are singular, a subtle mingling of her own scent with that of her perfume. Then the full effect reaches me. And this is the important part. The moment she passes. Those are the erotics of smell and space. Different notes twirl in the air after her. They make me want to turn my head. I want to look. What a pleasure and a pain it is. I can feel the ghost of sight tugging at my dopey head, egging me to catch a glimpse of the woman who just walked by. But what's the point? The full experience of smell is without closure. Imagine the phone is ringing, but you have no way to pick it up. So many sensations cage me in this dynamic. I may be blind, but the codes and behaviors of a sighted man haven't left the building yet. Last night, Tracy spent some time picking an outfit, curling her hair, and generally gussying up for a movie and some sushi. When she came downstairs, I felt the usual contradiction bubble within me. I wanted to say how terrific she looks, but can't. What husband doesn't want to say this? True, the words are there and available for use, but not their meaning. Unable to pay her that casual compliment steals something from Tracy, too, as if my blindness is robbing her of her own image. She lives in a house unseen, somewhat disappeared. Don't get me wrong, it's not like she nibbles at her spicy scallop roll, needing praise for her poise and makeup, nor do I fret about appearances, be it hers or mine. Yet just think about the inevitable disconnection. She smiles, and unless I'm told to smile back, I don't. I can't gaze at her, nor look into her eyes. With a simple phrase like, "You look great tonight," I can't communicate all those fuzzy feelings that are both caught and generated by a look. And I'll be honest, on her behalf, saying how great somebody sounds or how nice she smells only gets so much mileage. Frankly, after a certain point, when the novelty wears off, it sounds odd, if not creepy. This problem is built into the very heart of our language. The word desire comes from the Latin verb desiderare, to await from the stars. Desire, in other words, is a distant image that guides us like the North Star, but is never reached. Desire begins with an image. I remind myself of this because it explains why my sense of desire is so lost. I grew up sighted, so I'm tasked to learn another way of looking at love and attraction. And I thought Braille was going to be a pain. I suspect, however, that my next beginning is here, no longer guided by Tracy's image, but by her voice, by words. In that lies the true frontier of our intimacy, one I never could have imagined blindness would gift. A real blind love, the literal kind, is a giving over of consciousness. Today, I let Tracy see for me. Much of my world only comes through what she chooses to describe and illuminate with words. Because of that, I am no longer only attracted to her appearance, but the appearance she gives to the rest of the world. A little domestic case in point. We have a dog, a tan-colored pug with a black face. Technically, the pug crazed would describe her as smutty apricot, but that seems overly pornographic, not to mention abstract and bizarre. I have little idea what she looks like. Except one night, Tracy and I were eating dinner at the table. She began to giggle. "What's so funny?" I asked, and imagined my face and shirt covered in tomato sauce. "Nothing," she replied. "It's just the dog. She's curled up on her mat and she looks funny." "Funny? How does a dog look funny? Is she bent or something?" "Well," Tracy said, and puzzled for a moment, "it's not really the dog that's funny, so much as what she looks like to me." "And what's that?" "Like a loaf of bread burnt on one end. A fat loaf." It may not be the most extraordinary sight Tracy has let me in on, but I have an idea what the dog looks like now. In that, I can also glimpse something else. My wife is here too, in all the descriptions that make the images I have in my mind. What a closeness to share. There she is, everywhere I look inside. Thank you.
David Oyelowo, reading Ryan Knighton's essay, Seeing the World Through My Wife's Eyes. We'll talk to Ryan after the break.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with a first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
This is Modern Love. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Ryan Knighton lives in Vancouver, British Columbia, and remembers the first interaction he had after this piece was published.
The first thing I remember was I was at the gym, and this guy came up to me and he said, are you the blind guy who wrote that thing in the New York Times this week? And I said, yeah. And then he gave me this kind of, thanks a lot. And it turns out his wife just loved the piece and sort of gave it to him Sunday morning to read and as sort of a lecture about how he could be more attentive.
That was in 2006. The same year, Ryan's memoir, Cockeyed, was published. After writing the book, Ryan felt he had conquered all of the challenges possible for a blind person. Then he and his wife welcomed a daughter, Tess.
It all came back in just such a hard way because we had that morning when Tess was, you know, 4 weeks old or whatever, and I strapped her into the baby Bjorn on my chest, and I wanted to take her out for a walk, and I could just feel the air leave the room because my wife was like, oh, my God. We're going to strap a baby onto a blind man and go out into traffic. Because I, you know, it was one thing for me to risk myself for my own independence, but it was another thing for me to risk it at the expense of possibly Tess. So it was like a whole new learning curve completely for blindness specifically.
In 2010, Ryan wrote a second book. He called it Come On, Papa, Dispatches from a Dad in the Dark. In it, he navigates the first year of Tess's life, which he now says was the easiest time because Tess couldn't really move on her own. Once she knew she could move independently, things got very complicated. Ryan remembers one specific trip on the way to the grocery store. Tess was just two.
And she held my hand, and by the time we got to the corner, she just bolted. You know, she was just gone. And I imagine she'd gone under a truck by that point because it's like maybe she'll never come back. I don't know. And I was calling and calling for her. And she just wasn't answering because she knew she had power now. So what I did was I just started giggling. And I just sort of doubled over and giggled like I had something secret in my hands and I was laughing at it. And eventually she came back and she said, you know, what? She wanted to know what I was holding. And then I just snatched her. And I'm like, that's it. You know, your independence is over. Like carried her to the grocery store. The problem was she was also big enough that it was just killing my arms to carry her. So, you know, this was not a solution either. So when we finished at the grocery store, I said to her, I'll tell you what, do you want to be mummy? Because she knows that I'm always hanging on Tracy's elbow. And I said, you can hold the grocery bags. It was very light. And I said, and I'll take your elbow like mummy and you can guide me home. So I gave her back the power, but it came with responsibility too. And then, you know, it worked. She guided me all the way home, and I just enjoyed the thought of the traffic going by and seeing this 6-foot, blind, bald, tattooed man being dragged around by a 2-year-old, you know, like a kite.
Over the past 2 decades, Ryan has completely lost his vision. It was a slow but steady decline, so we asked how his marriage has weathered these changes.
I'm still really fascinated by what her experience is like of being in a house where you're not seen by your partner. That is, like, she is disappeared by me in many ways. She can't use facial expressions. She can't, you know, dress up in the morning. What does it mean to come downstairs in front of me? That's never gone away, actually. And it's not my story to tell. And I think it is a story that should be told by somebody, if not Tracy, just what it's like to be in a relationship with somebody who doesn't see you. It's got to be a strange way to be eclipsed.
Ryan says his life is good material for his creative work. He's now focused on writing for film and television, and he's taken up a new hobby.
I spend a lot of time surfing in my off hours now, which seems like a very un-Canadian thing to do, but we have terrific surfing up here. Just don't tell anybody. And I started doing it a few years ago when a magazine sent me on an assignment, and I went with a friend of mine who used to be a pro skateboarder, and he's deaf. So the deaf blind, the blind guy went surfing together, and it was as you would expect, where, you know, I'm saying, what do I do now? And he's saying, what? And I'm saying, where are you? But I didn't think it would be something that I got so into, but it is such an experience that drives you inside your body. It's not about looking out. It's very much about paying attention to your sense of balance in a really specific, animated way. And I love the feeling that I know there's nothing in front of me, so I can safely move quickly. And it's, you know, it's been 20 years since I ran. But to move quickly on a board and feel like I'm not going to hit anything, I just love it. Years ago, actually, my wife and daughter got me a yellow rasher to put over my wetsuit. And it just says, blind man, caution. And then under it, in parentheses, it says, for real.
Ryan Knighton. He's a writer on the CW show In the Dark, which can be found on Netflix. His essay is Seeing the World Through My Wife's Eyes. There's more after the break.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with the first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times. He says this essay really goes beyond the romanticized notion of blindness, the idea that your other senses are heightened when one is taken away.
I think Ryan Knighton's essay gets to and dances around the question of what is intimacy. And what I thought was so special here was how he talks about their connection and their intimacy through words. You know, of all the losses that he's had and that he forgets what things looked like, to have that replaced by her living inside his head, as he describes at the end, I thought was so just the definition of intimacy. You know, how much closer together can you be than having someone live in your head as a describer of the world? That beauty just really shone through.
That's Dan Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times. The theme of intimacy also resonated with David Oyelowo. He's been married since 1998.
I'm very blessed to have an intimacy with my wife that I highly value. And there's a lot of what he talks about here as an added dimension of closeness to his wife that I
though I'm sighted, I feel with my wife. So I felt able to relate to him in some ways, and also it made me very grateful for that which I take for granted, which is the ability to see my wife. And so it really spoke to me.
Thanks again to David for reading this week's essay. His new movie is Don't Let Go. If you want more modern love in your life, join our Facebook community. Dan Jones shares updates from the podcast and posts the latest essays. Check it out at facebook.com/modernlove. Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Caitlin O'Keefe, with original scoring and sound design by Matt Reed. This episode was produced by Jessica Alpert, John Perotti, and Amory Sievertson. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.